another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler.
Hello, folks. This is Jack Spierko with yet another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world and the changing economic times and the things that we can do to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. Usually this show is actually recorded on my 50-mile commute either to or from my office, either in the morning or the afternoon. I'm having an early morning here today, folks, and doing my part for the environment and giving myself a bit of a break, and I'm actually going to telecommute to work today, and hopefully my staff won't take too much advantage of me while I work from home. I'll be looking in on by phone and by instant message and by other people at the office today. But what that means is you're going to have a podcast that's unusually short on background noise today. Don't get too addicted to this because Monday I'll be podcasting in the car again. You're going to hear, I think, a definite improvement in the audio quality of today's show. Because I'm podcasting from home today, I'm going to get to do something that I've been wanting to do a long time, which is like a pure listener feedback show. All I'm going to do is sit here with Outlook open and my internet browser open, and I'm going to look at comments on the blog and emails that I've received and contact form results I've received, and I'm going to answer them. And by doing that, I'll address some of the things that you guys are actually sending me questions about, making comments about, and things like that. What I probably should do is I should probably go way back in time, like 2 months ago, and work forward, because people that have asked this stuff far long ago, maybe I should answer first. But most of those people, I've probably done shows about their topics, and a lot of really cool stuff's come in the past couple of days, so I'm going to actually do the other way around. It's going to be very recent stuff going back, and we'll see how much we get out of this. And after I get done with the show, if I can get all the stuff knocked out I need done today, maybe I'll record a second one and kind of put it out for Friday next week or something like that. I don't know if I'll get to do that yet or not, because this is real live stuff here, folks. I do a very limited amount of editing with this, believe it or not. Even when I'm on the road, I just kind of put music in the front, music in the back, and pop out the MP3, and that's it. I don't do a lot of splicing. Occasionally, if I need to read a list or something, I'll pause, then I'll read the list when I get to work and splice that in. But otherwise, you're pretty much listening to unedited live talk radio, for lack of a better term, without a guy with his finger on the beep key, because occasionally I say shit or piss or call our Congress bastards, and I don't do that just to do it. I'm just pointing that out now because I just recently did a policies and disclaimers page on the blog at thesurvivalpodcast.com to explain stuff like that. I just want to point out to people that may be new listeners that this is an adult language acceptable show, because a lot of times I'm pissed. I'm angry at our government. And then, I might do 4 shows in a row where I'm talking about, gardening with kids. And in a show like that, you're not going to hear any adult language because it's just not necessary. So one thing I just wanted to point out, because I've got 1 or 2 emails from people saying, if you don't stop saying shit, I'm not going to be able to listen to your show anymore. I'm sorry if you feel that way. There's a lot of watered-down radio out there. There's all the networks and everything else. And, what I get is a hell of a lot more emails going from people going, man, you feel just like me, and it feels good to hear somebody say it. So I'm going to keep saying it, but only when needed. It will not be something that's done for shock value or just because I can. So with that said, let's go on and let's just start taking some of the questions and comments and some of the things that have already come into the new forum. And if you're listening today, I'll tell you what I told you guys yesterday. There is a new forum available at the site. It is in beta. Beta meaning that it is unproven, it is unbranded, and you can't even link to it from the site or link back to the site from it yet. We're just testing it. But if you're interested in being in there early and starting to communicate with some of the dedicated people from the show and dedicated people from our community, you can get there manually by going to thesurvivalpodcast.com/forum. And we've had some pretty cool stuff come in there already, so maybe I'll use some of that as well. And also pointed out to me by someone's misunderstanding of something I said yesterday, that if you haven't been listening to me for a long time, one of the things I said yesterday may be a bit confusing. We'll get to that. But let's start out here. This person comes from a person that calls herself Faith. Nothing more, nothing less. And here's what she sent me. She sent me an email that said, show idea. Christmas is coming. Debt is high. I have a daughter getting married. Oh, God. Any ideas of how to get around the high expense of holiday season? I thought about giving silver, but I don't know if I'm getting taken. $10 for 10 pre-64 dimes faith. That's really three questions that I see there. Let's start with the easy one. Giving silver, I think, is a great idea. I think it will help with the holiday season, and I think it'll help a lot with kids. I have, let's see, two nieces. No, I have a niece. As far as the young kids, I have a niece, a grandniece. I have another grandniece or grandnephew on the way, and I have a nephew that are all still in that kid age. And all of these kids have tons of crap because my wife's side of the family is fairly large, and everybody gives the kids at least one thing at Christmas, and then the parents do what they can. And if you go into their playrooms, it looks like a freaking nursery school playroom for these kids. They have so much crap. My wife said, why don't we give them silver this year? So that's what we're going to do. We're actually going to give them silver eagles. We'll give them a couple or three silver eagles apiece and maybe a book. So we can enlighten their minds and enlighten their investment portfolio at the same time. So I think it's a great idea. On the price, $10 for 10 pre-64 dimes, that's probably a pretty good price. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to jump over to a site called Coinflation, and I'll put a link to that in today's show notes. And I'm going to use their calculator to see exactly what 10 silver dimes are worth in melt value. And the coin calculator tells me that the melt value, just no numismatic value whatsoever, if you just melted those coins down at today's price of silver, which happens to be today $12.65 an ounce, you got $9.15 worth of pure silver there. And then the coins have, kind of, at least even if they're rough, they have some kind of numismatic value. So a dollar per dime is a pretty good price, Faith, and you can always check that at Coinflation. The other thing you can do, and I'll leave a link to this too, is jump over to Monex. And Monex gives live silver prices for bullion, for gold, for, gold bullion, silver bullion, platinum, palladium. And they also, if you look lower on the charts on the page that I'll link to, they give you pricing for things like American silver coin, currency pre-64s. And they'll give you the price per ounce. And what you need to realize about coins is that 10 dimes is roughly 1 ounce, 4 quarters is roughly 1 ounce, a silver dollar is roughly 1 ounce. Not 1 ounce of silver, because they're only 90% silver. But they don't price the exchange spot price of silver for U.S. coins at the melt value. They price them at what people are actually paying for bags of silver coin pre-64s. And those are exchanged as a commodity, and they are exchanged above their melt value because they have, again, numismatic value beyond the melt value. So what I'm seeing over there right now is that 90% U.S. silver coins are right now live trading as a spot price of $13.24 an ounce. So you're actually buying them below spot at that price. Now, don't get too excited about that. Let me have to explain about silver. This is not a money-making enterprise. It's just you try to use existing pricing to make sure that you're not getting taken. It's important. That's what the big question is. Am I getting taken? The answer is no. This is a good price. And, negotiate what you can. But you have to realize that a lot of these coin dealers, they have huge amounts of inventory, and these spot prices run up, run down, run up, run down, run up, run down, and you can't necessarily dump stuff at the top of the spot price. What you want to make sure is you're watching where the average is right now, you're thinking about where it's going, and you buy when silver's low. Is silver low today? It's definitely up from earlier this week because the market's continuing to take a beating, and the dollar's continuing to take a beating. I just bought quite a bit of it in the $10 range. So you can get it for less at times, but any time in the last, I would say last 5 years that you could get 10 silver dimes for 10 bucks, it was a fair price. If you're going to be giving them to kids, you may want to do what we're doing, which is give silver eagles. They won't cost you that much more per ounce, and they're prettier for kids. So if you give a kid 10 silver dimes or one silver eagle, it may cost you a little bit more, but they probably would value it a little bit more because kids like things that are cool and pretty. If you're talking about older people like your daughter that's getting married, you could give some silver. in whatever form. She should understand that. The married part, geez, you know, I just don't believe that the parents of the bride pay for everything, so hopefully you're not in that situation. And I think that one of the things that our young people really need to be instructed with these weddings, and I see these huge weddings, and people spend $20,000 to $30,000 on a wedding, that would be a hell of a damn down payment on a nice house. And I don't mean some expensive house. You can get a nice house as long as you're not trying to live somewhere quote-unquote trendy today and think that you're more important and you're better than you are, and you need to live somewhere where you can jump on a train and go out and club every night. You can buy a nice house in middle America for between $90,000 and $120,000 right now. And even with the credit situation where it is, if you got 30 grand to put down, you can buy a nice house. I don't think you're in that situation, Faith, so it's not specifically to you, but when I answer these questions, I try to do them for more than one person. And if you have a family member that's fixing to dump 30 grand in a wedding right now, you may want to point out to those people that they could have a hell of a start to their lives. And that what I've always told brides, especially because they seem more into this than grooms, is do not focus on your wedding. Focus on your marriage. And having a home that's not a slave pit to you, that you're not a slave to, that you can't do things because you have to pay your mortgage, that is a good way to start focusing on the marriage rather than the wedding right away. So keep the cost of weddings down. Just do it because it makes sense. Moving on to another question. This one comes from a guy, DLB Daniel. Okay, Daniel says, Jack, interesting topic. He's talking about America Can We Save Her from yesterday. It's my belief that third-party candidates detract from the main Republican-Democrat race. While Obama and McCain were never my first choice, third candidates could siphon votes and would end up the loser. We would end up the loser. I humbly admit that I voted for Ross Perot. Looking back, I think that if we had all cast our votes for George Bush Sr. in the 92 elections, they may have been more successful. Troubling times ahead, as you aptly pointed out, we should throw out the current batch of politicians in 4 years, repeat, and until we begin to see change. That's kind of all over the map there, Daniel, but let me give you my thoughts on third party candidates. First of all, there's no one answer for everybody, and I can't tell you how to vote, and I never will. But if you're considering voting for a third-party candidate, and I've had people email me things about, well, Bob Barr, I really like libertarian ideals, and I like Bob Barr, but Bob has this issue and that issue. Well, vote for him anyway, because you're voting for libertarianism, not Barr, if you want to vote for libertarianism, not because I said so, right? So, or you're going to vote for the Constitutional Party, vote for Chuck Baldwin, not so much to vote for Chuck Baldwin, because right now we know Chuck Baldwin can't win. So it's casting a vote for constitutionalism to be heard, to make a point. Now, when it comes to splitting the vote, throwing your vote away, and all this bullcrap that we're fed, there is some truth to that, but it's never all truth. And remember, some truth is usually the reality at any time somebody gives you a mass message, not all truth. What I mean by that is, okay, if you live in Pennsylvania or Ohio right now, your one vote for McCain or Obama may impact the election. A couple hundred votes for McCain or Obama in Ohio or Pennsylvania may, in fact, impact the election. Down here, if I so choose to vote for Chuck Baldwin or Bob Barr, my vote is not going to impact the presidential election because I'm in Texas. The odds of Obama winning in Texas are, oh, I don't know, they're probably about as good as McCain winning in Delaware. It ain't going to happen. So before you think you're throwing your vote away, think about this. Is your state, at least the presidential election, a battleground state? Now, let's say that I really thought we were going to come down to the wire in Texas between Obama and McCain. God, I hate to say this, but I'd have to vote for McCain. Palin makes that a hell of a lot more palatable. I think Palin makes McCain a lot more palatable. I think it's why McCain's our next president. I think he's going to win the election. But if I was in a situation where I had to choose, you know, it's like, do I get punched in the face or kicked in the groin? You know, that's how I feel about this election between these two guys, really. You know, one's going to hurt really bad, and one's going to make me look funny. All right? So I'd have to make that choice, and in that case, I'd choose McCain. That wouldn't stop me from voting for third parties. See, what people don't understand is there's so many other people that we elect that have more power than the president. Your state representatives and your state senators, okay? And your federal representatives and your federal senators, the Senate and the Congress federally, and the state and the representatives at the state and senators at the state level, and all your city council members and all things like that. Because the Libertarian Party is so active here in Texas, I'm going to have a choice of a Libertarian for just about every position on the ballot. And regardless of what I do for president, in most instances, I'm going to vote for the Libertarian. And I'm going to make a statement that way. And in the last election, we actually had quite a few of these positions where Libertarians got between 5 and 15% of the vote in these local elections, and we've even won some. So it can happen, it can work. So, you know, evaluate your situation beyond just this mass media message of you're throwing your vote away, or it'll split the election, and all this other crap, because once again, why do they tell you that? To keep you entrenched in a two-party cabal. And I have to ask you this. I often felt myself in the past, as a diehard Republican until I became what I call reformed, that, yes, the third-party Ross Perot thing screwed George Bush Sr. and screwed the country and brought us Bill Clinton. Do you think the country would have really been that much better off under George Sr.? Maybe it would, and here's why. Because maybe we wouldn't have George Jr. today. Because George Jr., who I voted for, folks, I'm almost sad to say that. I voted for the guy. George Jr.'s legacy is now going to go down alongside Jimmy Carter's, believe it or not, with what's happened to the economy here at the end, from the people he's appointed, and from the Congress and the Senate, both Republican and Democrat-controlled, yes, but he allowed this stuff to happen. He did nothing to head it off. And, I have some part of me that has some appreciation for Bush, but most of it I'm pretty upset with him right now. So I don't know that we would have been any better off other than we would have got his son as president, because it wouldn't have worked out that way by now. Okay, this next one comes from a guy named Jonathan Kemp, who's over in the UK, it seems like, because he talks about commuting between St. Edmunds in Suffolk and then to Essex, and he drives about 50 miles to work every day, and he listens to the podcast that I record during my 50-mile commute. And his email's really long, and I'm going to probably cover all of it eventually, but it's so long I can't really do it on the show and be fair to other people that are asking questions and making points. So I'll just take his first real question. What he says is, I'm interested to know if you have any thoughts about the precursors to civil disorder and martial law, as I think this is a scenario that could easily present itself, especially in the UK, after some serious economic or natural disaster. What do you think the signs are to look for that tell you it's time to get out of Dodge and avoid the authorities? What do you think is the best strategy for a family to adopt in the event of impending martial law? Well, You've answered your own question there a little bit, Jonathan, because the answer to the question is getting out. So the best strategy is to have a plan to get out, to know where you would go, and have a place that you can go that is most likely to be unaffected by martial law, civil unrest, in the event that it occurs. And clearly, the further you go from urban centers, the more that is true. And even small towns and cities, if it's a widespread problem, are going to have some issues. But when you get out really in the sticks, so to speak, even in England, and there is some of that land left out there, you're pretty safe. So it's a matter of either having a little piece of land you can go to with a little place on it, even if it's a little shack, or knowing someone in a situation like that that you've already prearranged with that you can kind of hole up with in that situation. If it's a very regionally focused thing where, let's say that, you know, where you're at in Essex is breaking down, but, 50 mile away in another city because it was a something that happened from the weather or something like that, it's not England-wide, maybe you could just go somewhere and grab a hotel, all right? You need to move early to be able to do that. That's the big problem with people, that they wait till the last minute to evacuate a hurricane, and they keep going further and further away from the hurricane, and they can't find a hotel. Well, that's because they waited till like a day before the hurricane was going to hit. Where if you had jumped early, you could have went a couple hundred miles north for these people that need to get out of Galveston, for instance, and got yourself a nice little cheap hotel on the side of the road with no problems whatsoever. So it's about getting out as quickly as possible. So that goes to your other question. How do you recognize the signs? Here's the reality. Things in a civil unrest situation go from relatively calm to the edge of the cliff very rapidly. What happens is usually the seedier elements of society are the first ones to go. And it's like, we used to go fishing for trout in Pennsylvania when I was a kid, and there's actually a season for this, and they stock fish in the stream. And the first day of the season where you're allowed to actually fish for them, you can't fish till 8 o'clock. And at like 7:30, there'd be guys lining stream banks. You could see them up and down the stream. Everybody waiting to throw a line in. Now, everybody's afraid that somebody else might be a warden, right, or an officer, a police officer that takes care of fish and game, if you're not familiar with wardens. And they're all afraid to throw in even a minute early. But everybody wants to throw in because everybody's really excited to fish. Eventually, what happens is, you know, 10 minutes till one person throws in and yanks a fish out. Everybody looks up and down the stream. Nobody comes and arrests him. One other guy gets brave and he throws in. He, you know, starts fishing. Maybe he pulls a fish out. As soon as that second guy throws in, and if I was a warden, I'd wait because I'd bust everybody, right? But as soon as that second guy throws in and doesn't get busted, lines go in up. You look for a mile up and down the river and you see lines going in and people pulling fish out. Even though they all know they're technically breaking the law because one guy did it first. This is how these civil unrest situations happen. If you watch even just protesters, once the first protester shoves a cop, everybody else starts doing it. Civil unrest works the same way. Once one person starts looting, other people start looting. And it starts out with the scumbags, and pretty soon it takes over, and it's anybody that's scared and thinks they need to do it to survive or feed their family. So you can't look at the signs of what the people are doing. You have to evaluate the crisis, not the response people are having. And you have to stay in touch with the potential crisis. And if you are in doubt, do it. We used to have a saying in the Army, when you, like, there are certain situations where you salute and certain situations where you do not salute. And it was, when in doubt, whip it out, all right? Which means when you weren't sure if you should salute, salute, because you were better off getting in trouble for saluting inappropriately than you were for not saluting when you should, that the penalty would always be greater. That's a hell of a lesson when it comes to civil unrest. If you're not sure, but you think you should get out, take a long weekend. Just get the hell out, go somewhere, and watch it from a distance. If you're wrong, and if everything looks okay, go back. So evaluate the situation, not the response. That'll keep you out of trouble a lot of the times. And that's, you know, it's a perfect thing with these hurricanes. Well, how do we know that, like, the hurricane's going to hit, and I kind of live in North Houston, and I'll probably have power. Maybe I won't. I don't know. I'm not going to drown. My house isn't going to get blown down. Will there be civil unrest? Okay, well, you got to make a call. Do you want to stay and defend your home, which people have done, and I can understand why you would, or do you want to get out? But you got to evaluate the situation because the storm is coming. Financial storms, other things work the same way. If I start seeing pandemic flu spread across the United States, hopefully for my family and I, it won't start here in Dallas. It could, and that'll be a more difficult situation. But if they start having a flu pandemic, and let's say it starts spreading through the Northeast first, man, we're packing up our beans and our bread, and we are going to the mountain in Arkansas, and we are about as isolated up there as I can figure out how to get myself and be relatively comfortable, and I'm staying there for a year. And I could stay there for a year if I had to. I'll do what I can to keep the business running from a remote location, but I am not letting my family be killed by a disease that can be avoided by avoiding exposure. Whether or not it goes to civil unrest, I don't know. But the threat is this, you know, dead is dead. Your goal as a survivor is survival, right? So if the threat is overzealous responders, police, and et cetera, and authorities, you need to survive them. If your threat is looters and muggers, you need to survive them. If your threat is a weather event, you need to survive it. Okay, so it all goes back to the same thing. Evaluate the situation. Monitor the situation. Respond to the situation. Don't look for signs that society is breaking down. Look for threats that could cause society to break down. And when your gut says go, go. The worst thing that will happen is you'll spend a few days away from home. And if you have a plan for how to execute that, it won't be a big deal. And if nothing goes wrong, look at it the way we did in the military. It was a drill. And we've learned from it, and you'll probably make some mistakes, and you'll learn how to do it better next time. So that's kind of a long answer to that question, but it's the best answer I have. Next one, nice and short and simple. Ken Aslin wrote in to me this morning, very early, 7 o'clock this morning. How about in your email to the winners, ask if they would prefer equal, he's talking about the listener appreciation contest where I'm giving away an iPod. How about offering to give away equal amounts of silver coins instead of an iPod Nano? Because some of us already have an iPod and we wouldn't necessarily want another one, even the new shiny one, basically, is what he's saying. Well, I'll tell you what. Done. So the listener appreciation contest, now for the winner, will be your choice of an iPod Nano or roughly $149 worth of American Silver Eagles. So if you've been holding off on the listener appreciation contest and you've been helping the show grow, join if you would want the Eagles, because, hey, man, that's easy. The only thing I can't do is away. I can't give away money. All right, and silver eagles are a commodity. They are a thing. If I start giving away, you know, $150 check, then I'm running kind of a raffle here, and I can't do that. But a product, a prize like that, you got it. You want $150 worth of silver coin, or you want an iPod, you tell me if you win, and you'll get that. So, great suggestion. Awesome suggestion. And I'm even thinking about eventually hiring what I'm going to call an intern for this show. Somebody that would research topics and source information for me and put together some outlines for me to help me do my shows quicker, better, faster. And I'm entertaining the idea of doing so. I was thinking, you know, somebody like that, I'm not going to be able to pay them well. It's going to be kind of be, you know, $50 a week or something. I pay somebody like that. I'm entertaining the idea of paying them in $50 worth of silver coin a week. So if you have an interest in that, think about it. Don't inundate me with emails yet because I'm not ready to do that yet. I don't have the structure set up to do that yet. But I may interview people and I may give them that option. It won't make you rich, but it would be an interesting way to be part of the show if you're interested in that and get some experience in, I guess, the broadcasting industry. And if you're working, especially like a student or somebody working toward that end, maybe it would be good. So great idea, done and done. Well, folks, I just sorted by the subject line, and I have a ton of emails here. So I'm going to have to do more shows like this. I mean, we're already almost at 30 minutes. I'll keep working through some of these, though, and see what I can. Here's another one that just recently came in. It's not really a question. It's somebody's story, and I love stories, so I'm going to tell this guy's story. His name's Chris Nault. Jack, regarding the model number, it would be great. He was asking about what I record my show on, and actually I can give that here on the show. I record this show on a little MP3 recorder. It is made by Sony. It is an ICD P620. Saying that military-wise, it is India Charlie Delta Papa 620 is the model number by Sony. So that's my model number there, Chris. But here's his story. On one of your podcasts I just listened to, you were asking for young people to tell you their stories. I think you were directing your request to younger listeners, so my story may not be very interesting to you, but here it is anyway. And I've already emailed Chris back directly and told him, of course this story is interesting to me. I may have been doing a show about young people, but I'm interested in everybody's story. And I think even in that show I was saying that I wanted to see young people and middle-aged people such as myself and old people reach out together and bridge a generation. So, Chris, maybe you can help with that. I think you're not an old guy. I think you're about my age. Here's what he says. I am 40-something. Okay, yeah, he's close to my age. Married with four children, ages 6 to 12. Hey, man, good for you, bud. I live in Ashland, Nebraska, in a small lake community. It's about 30 miles southwest of Omaha. I'm a software developer in Omaha, and I had a rather large mortgage, but not much other debt. I am also a Dave Ramsey fan. I recently realized that my current lifestyle would not be sustainable if any kind of financial crisis occurred or if there were a natural or man-made disaster. I started looking around for information and opinions on what can be done in my situation. That's when I stumbled onto your website. I downloaded every podcast you had available at the time. I really like your podcast on home versus homestead. I produce to maintain my home right now. It produces nothing for me. I have decided to embrace your philosophy of living the life you want if times get tough or even if they don't. I am literally starting from zero, another great podcast of yours. So your site has been a valuable resource to me. Your words are very encouraging too. I plan to keep a journal of my journey to freedom so maybe someday I can share what I learn along the way with someone else. Thanks again for your great work, Chris Nault. Folks, when I told you yesterday that this show was becoming one of the most rewarding experiences of my life, people sending me things like that, and there have been a lot of them, are why. There's the guy doing it. And the reason I share his story with you is not so I can say, look how great I am. It is saying, look how great Chris is. Because Chris is taking control of his life and providing a better life for his wife, himself, and his four children. And Chris, God damn it, good for you. And if, like Dave Ramsey says, if someone tells you you're crazy, you just laugh. And if you have to live on rice and beans to pay off the mortgage, do it. Because they will look crazy to you when your debt is gone and your home has become a homestead. And you have the life you want, no matter what happens when times get tough, or even if they don't. So, you rock on, man, and thanks for sharing your story. On journaling, hey, I mentioned yesterday that setting up a WordPress blog was a lot more powerful than Blogger, but the beautiful thing about Blogger is free. Why not go over to Blogger.com, which is a Google product, sign up for a blog. I promise you, if you are, I think you said you're a software developer, right? Man, you're going to have no problem with that. Why don't you set up a WordPress blog? I'm sure if you can develop software, you can set up a WordPress blog. Get yourself a little web host. Spend $5 a month for it. Put some Google ads on it. Maybe you'll make your $5 back. And tell your story online as it happens. Do what I'm doing, except if you don't want a podcast blog, there's a lot of us out there, send me your blog. I'm going to put together a resource soon of all the survivor blogs I know about. I'll add you to it, and anybody else, that's an open invitation. Journal what you do. Shoot little videos. Put them on YouTube. Share what you do, Chris. Share what you do, everybody. That's how we're going to take this country back. I might have sounded a little depressed when I answered the question, can we save her in regards to the country yesterday? But let me tell you something, folks. We can save her. And it's people like Chris that will do it. Here is a quote. If you ever want to quote me anywhere and attribute something to me, this will be the quote. If you want to take your nation back, you must first take back your life. That's what Chris is doing. He's taking back his life. And that makes you, Chris, an upstanding, patriotic American, doing your duty to the Constitution, and the duty that you should be doing for your fellow citizens. You take your life back first. And when you have your life back, then you won't be misled. Then you will be able to make a difference for the whole country. So God bless you, man. And there's a lot of emails like that. If I don't read yours, folks, if you sent me one, I feel the same way about you. Keep up the great work, folks. I don't know how much further I'm going to go, folks. I'm over 30 minutes now, but let's do at least a few more. Colt Heyman, as he calls himself on the Zombie Hunters blog, and I don't remember his first name, and I'm not going to jump to another one of his emails to find it, so we'll just call him Colt Heyman here. He was talking about the podcast I did, episode 56, Lies in Plain Sight, where I talked about the fact that they tell us everybody lives longer today. I went back and looked up 20 of the founders of our country, people like Washington, Jefferson, Adams, etc., Monroe, and on and on and on. I did the first 7 presidents, and I did a bunch of Revolutionary War heroes and signers of the Declaration of Independence, and people like Benjamin Franklin and John Hancock. Averaged out the ages they died at, figured out it was 75 years of age. Looked up the average lifespan today on the CDC, and it was 75 years of age for white males, which all these people were, and exposed that lie. He said he never really thought about it, but it seems like that makes sense, and it opens your eyes, mind to other things. But what he actually said is, when I was talking about the Federal Reserve System and how this newest depression is actually something they caused on purpose because they make money on it. He says, also hearing you talk about these things, there seems to be a pattern of depression and collapse, then economic stability. At least that's how I'm seeing it. The way I see it, we're heading into a depression, the big pink elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about or look at. Your podcasts are very informative. Thanks for all the research you put into this. Thank you to you. I am more aware of what's going on in the government, business, and such. And I actually saw Colt Haven also posted in the forum that he actually had moved some money out of some pretty high-risk stocks in a 401k plan recently and then watched the Dow tumble 600 points. So I'm glad I was able to help you with that. Just remember, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm just glad you made that decision for yourself there, bud. Is there a pattern of economic collapse, and then stability and prosperity and collapse, up, down, up, down, up, down? Absolutely. Is it orchestrated? I believe so. I don't think that's tinfoil hat stuff, folks. I think if you look at the current situation, what happened? Our Congress passed laws that said poor people could buy houses too, to be fair. We went from having 5% subprime loans to over 40% of our new loans being subprime. And Congress, the Senate, and everybody in government up to the president cheered all the way along the path. This was done by the government. The Fed kept the rates low. The Fed kept pumping money into the system to keep it going. Everybody knew what they were doing, and eventually the collapse came. No one was blind to this. And people are making fortunes right now while the market falls apart. And the Federal Reserve has bought out Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, and AIG. It's not a government bailout. It's government because they're using our money that they're loaning to us from the Federal Reserve printing press to do it with. But since the Federal Reserve is not a government organization, it is a privately held corporation. You can look this up if you haven't heard my other shows. Because of that, they now own, for instance, about 79.9% in AIG in return for loaning the money at 8.5% interest. All right. So what you're watching is a carefully orchestrated takeover of economic giants for pennies on the dollar using our own money to make it happen, to consolidate power. And on the other side of it, at the same time, the people will scream to their government to not let it happen again, and they will give the government power to do things that they would have never given them just a few years ago. There's a pattern. You're right. Spot on. And it's a nasty one. And eventually we'll come out of this depression, and it will be a depression this time, I think. I think you're right about that. If not, it'll be a very severe recession. It's going to be at least as bad as the 70s this time. I really believe that. I wish it wasn't true, but I do. But we'll come out of it, and we'll do this again. And every time we do it, we lose more freedom, more power gets consolidated, the people willingly let the government take over more of the private sector, and we do it again, and we do it again, and we do it again. One thing about the powers that be, folks, is they're very patient. They're very, very patient. And they're slowly doing this. To them, I think it's like a giant monopoly game. It's more for your amusement. Because the people doing this, if you had 5% of what these people had in money, you'd probably give half of it away and go live your life and wouldn't ever work again a day in your life. Right? People that have $1 billion and want more, they're just not normal people. Something is wrong with their minds. Something maybe that makes them brilliant enough to get the $1 billion in the first place. But if you think you need more, once you have more than most people will ever have, something's wrong. And I think that's the perverted nature of the system that we're dealing with here. Because like I said yesterday, we do not have a government of the people, for the people, and by the people today. We have a government of the mega corporation, by the politician, for both of them. And we, the people that pay for everything, are being left out of the conversation. That's part of why I have this show here every day. And I think on that note, I'm going to go ahead and wrap today's show up. That's 37 minutes, and I only got through about 4 emails or 5 emails there. Folks, I really enjoyed doing this show. I'll try to do more of them in the future, so keep your comments, suggestions, emails, etc. coming. Remember, you now have a way to interact with me and other members of our community at thesurvivalpodcast.com/forum. Remember, go to thesurvivalpodcast.com, comment on this episode or other episodes you've listened to, and give me feedback there, and talk to other listeners there as well. And remember to enter that listener appreciation contest, which now when we hit 1,000 feed burner subscribers, which we are rocking our way towards, man, and I'm really excited about it. When we hit that number, I'm either giving you an iPod Nano Chromatic or $149, roughly anyway, we'll round it off, worth of silver American Eagles. Your choice, sent to your house just for helping me spread the word about the show. So hopefully you guys enjoyed today's show. Hopefully you enjoyed the lack of background noise today. And we'll try to do more shows like this in the future. And I'll always be here, and I'll always be doing everything I can to fulfill my mission, which is to help you figure out how to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. You can scream, and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.